I'm Elizabeth Ames, and this is the Women in Product podcast. This episode is part of our series about the path to Chief Product Officer. It is part of a group of supplementary interviews with people who directly participate in the selection of CPOs and influence their performance in the role. The Path to CPO podcast series has primarily focused on the journeys of 9 women CPOs to the C-suite. This supplemental interview takes us behind the scenes of the executive recruiting process and provides insight into the thought processes behind the decisions and the challenges throughout. Chris Johnson is founder and managing partner at Artisanal Talent Group and previously a partner at SPMB Executive Search. Chris has an MBA from Villanova University and a BA from James Madison University. We were connected to Chris by Anika Gupta, who he successfully recruited to Rubrik as their CPO. Our interview with Anika was released on March 8th. We wanted to learn more about Chris's experience placing product leaders and the process overall. Chris is interviewed by Rashmi Ramesh, who has been our interviewer throughout the series. Rashmi is a member of the Women in Product community. I'll let Rashmi and Chris take it from here.
Welcome, Chris, and thank you so much for your time, and welcome to Women in Product. Let's kind of get started about the role itself, being the Chief Product Officer. So when were you first introduced to the so-called Chief Product Officer role per se in your career?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, you know, I think the titles, that's head of product, VP product, senior VP of product, the top product person in the company, whether that's Series A, Series B, or pre-IPO or public. So I just want to call that out quickly. You know, I think the time I most often come across product where it is CPO, it is truly when a company has reached an inflection point that is very different in its life cycle than the previous handful of years, right? They've gone from single product to multi-product. They've gone from kind of, they're starting to do acquisitions. There's not really like a revenue stage per se. I think the way I describe it is the complexity has become broader than just a single product for a single use case. So now you need more of that conductor and the orchestrator who can hire great leaders, whether they're VPs or whatever it might be, to run maybe the cloud product or run the ecosystem or the platform or whatever it might be, or product number two. And so you start to diverge from, you know, being the product person over, you know, one small piece or a specific area rather, to now it's like, hey, we have to think about what the market broadly looks like. How do we expand into new geographies, into new verticals? And that's when I see CPO most often. And to give it a stage, it's typically later stage, right? 50 to 100 million plus. It just depends, again, parity on, if they've got a CMO, a CTO, and CFO, you might see CPO drop in a little bit earlier, but typically it's at that mid to later stage type company.
Got it. Thank you. And you very nicely articulated about when the complexity of that problem space really expands. And did this definition kind of change or evolve when you over the course of time, when probably you first interviewed the first candidate for this role to your current time now?
Yeah, it has definitely evolved. And I think, you know, I joke with my partners all the time because product is probably the hardest to recruit for because there is no silver bullet, right? Mm-hmm. Founders are usually the product individual until a certain point. And then they hire, you know, kind of the craftsperson or whatever skill set that they're looking for. And then the company gets to a point where it's like, we need a broader executive, but someone who has come up through those ranks. And I think that's the part where the thing that has changed the most is CPOs have such a dynamic background. Some of them are technologists, some of them carried a bag. You know, some of them were SEs or what, you know, maybe they spent 10 years at Bain. You know, it just is it's a very different background than kind of like a very specific track for an engineering leader. So I would say the things that I've noticed that have changed fall into the bucket of what do we need this person to do? Are they just inward focused? Here's what we have, partner with engineering, let's make sure we're building the best possible product. Now it's, this is the person that's talking to the top 50 customers. This is the person that is kind of the face of it, right alongside, you know, maybe the founder, CEO, or whomever it might be. And so they've taken a much more front and center seat at the table, because so many of these companies, they live and die by the product. At the end of the day, if you don't have a great product, then you don't have a great company. Therefore, if you have a great product leader who can embody that, you have a lot more increased chances of that successful growth stage.
Got it. That's a great insight. During these different CPO hires, did you have to do anything different to attract women candidates, as this is our, you know, women in product and addressing a lot of women out here? So would love to hear your perspective on that.
So there's a number of areas that I should and will cover there, which is, you know, I've had the fortune to, you know, place a number of very successful women in these kind of mid to late stage CPO roles from Rubrik and Starburst and Pendo, Iterable. Like, these are the 50 to a couple hundred million in revenue. And the way that I think about, I'll start with kind of the top of the funnel, right? So the idea to every search is figure out who are the companies that matter to the client that they want to go recruit from. From there, it's who was at those companies in pivotal moments that are, again, adjacent to whatever the company that you're recruiting for is trying to fill, right? So usually in that case, you're let's say, you know, in the case of Rubrik, right, a couple hundred million dollar company, the first thing you're doing is you're looking at what are the other domain relevant companies? What are the companies that have seen the growth and have exceeded that by a couple orders of magnitude, right? Because you're not hiring the person who's just going to top out at where they are, but they can take the company, or in this case, Rubrik, can take it, you know, 2, 5, 10x beyond that. And so you start with kind of that bucket, and then it becomes, okay, who are the companies that matter? Then it's who are the executives at those companies that matter? And so from that perspective, how I always describe it is every pipeline that I have with a client is diversity is always at the top of the list. And how I describe that to folks is there's no silver magic bullet here, but it's what is representative of the market, right? If there's, you know, categories are different. So in the case of Rubrik, if you're looking for backup and recovery and deep data cloud infrastructure, that's going to be a specific kind of, you know, maybe it's 4 or 5 out of 10 senior scaled women who have done the Rubrik run times 5. Now, if you're looking at, you know, MarTech or some SaaS application, right, you look at that's a might be a bigger, broader pool because maybe it's not as technical, right? And maybe you've got Salesforce that has created such a kind of an amazing wave of diverse CPO type candidates. And so that's one thing that I like to call out is my approach to diversity is not sitting there saying, hey, you know, here's exactly what you have, but it really comes down to let's talk about the market and what does it look like, and then build the representative set from there. So that's piece one. And that starts with the research top of funnel. And then as you get into the search, right, there's a couple pieces that are really important to call out. One is if you don't have a representative slate of the market, A, how do you change that? Whether you use the board, whether you use, you know, VCs and execs in the company to expand, or is it, hey, maybe there just aren't enough, like, if a client is asking me, I need a CPO, been there, done that, taking a company public, gone from 200 to 500 or a billion, whatever the growth might be, whatever the qualities are, you might have to say, okay, we know what the market will bear, right? Here's the landscape. I can show you everyone that's been at these companies. So do we either go down the path and go look for a broad athlete? Domain doesn't matter, right? Because at the end of the day, you've got VPs, SVPs, directors, people that have that domain in the org. And maybe you're just looking for an athlete that knows scale, people, process, leadership, customers. That's one piece. The other piece is maybe you really need that domain because it is such a nuanced category that you're like, you know what? I don't need the person that's gone from 200 to 500. As long as they've seen some scale and they know what, you know, $100, $200 million looks like, and they're just a best in class person high potential, that's the other way in which we go. And so what happens in the course of a search is you start to figure out, you know, what are the nice to haves, what are the must haves. Those change as searches go. And, you know, diversity always stays at the top. And so the idea being, okay, we have to change something else. What is that? And scale and domain expertise are typically the first ones to go.
Thank you for that. I think you illustrated that really well. And to take a step back, how do you start sourcing the candidates in the first place when you've kind of done this market survey research, at least to begin with respect to what you need? Now, how do I start putting people in the pipeline?
Yeah. So there is no kind of secret sauce. Most recruiters, right? It's a ground game. Typically, really what happens is we start with the companies, we understand who was there and what roles and what success they've seen. And then it's LinkedIn, phone calls, messages, and really just doing everything we can to not annoy people, but to give them an opportunity to have a meaningful, interesting conversation, right? And I think there's going to be a lot of people that listen to this, and I'll say there are distinctly different types of search people. There are the, like, I will do nothing except get in front of you and, you know, show you 15 types of companies, even though you've told me you only want one specific one and not listen. And then there's the, like, let's build the long-term relationship. I don't have anything relevant right now, but you come highly recommended. How do I get in front of you? How do I build that relationship? I would highly recommend, if you have the chance to build relationships with great exec search people that work in the, that specialize in the areas of which you want to spend your career, build them. But really what it comes down to is us getting in front of people, right? And building those relationships. And again, the candidates that we're going after are in such high demand, right? I mean, how do you separate the noise from signal? I mean, that's not anything I can do. That is on everyone that's listening to this, which is you have to have some sort of guardrails of, like, you can't talk to every exec recruiter or you probably won't be able to have a day job. And so trying to, like, hone in on who does what within my area. You know, if you just want to stay in private equity and be the CPO of awesome private equity companies, there's great search people for that. If you want to just be Series A to Series C, rinse and repeat, grow, scale, do that. If you want to do public companies, there's search firms, there's people that do all sorts of searches. It's a massive market. The question is figuring out who, and the only way you figure out who is by kind of filtering the messages that you get, right? And understanding, you know, if a search person ever reaches out and says, I can't tell you the name of the company, well, there might be some confidentiality to that, but try and get the name of the company so you're not wasting 20 minutes of your time being like, oh, I wouldn't actually go to that company in the first place. And so trying to filter those things out to separate the noise from the signal and then be able to build the relationship once you get in there, that's how you get into the process.
Got it. Oh, that's such an amazing insight. Thank you for that. And in this process, like, when you have built that pipeline, I know you talked about the top things being, at least a few of the top things being, the domain and kind of the scale experience based on the stage of the company. But are there any other skills when you have a conversation with the CPOs, any other things that just pop out to say, hey, yeah, this is my ideal candidate that I want to put forth in front of the CEO?
Yeah, I mean, there's... Every search is unique and different, and it kind of goes with all things in life. But as we talked about on the front end, like, my job is to not show a CEO or whomever is the hiring manager, and let's assume CEO in this case, hiring CPO. I think I fail at a search if I have to present 15 to 20 or 30 people, right? Because not enough work is done on the front end to really identify, like, you know, not just scale and domain, but what are the other things that we're looking for? Is it, are they technical? Do they come up with, what type of background have they grown up with into that product role? You know, do you see them, could they ever own engineering? Would you roll it up together? And, like, really understanding kind of the dynamics there. So every search is different and unique, but there are a number of things that I specifically look for when having these conversations. Number one is the conversation itself. This may be a bit of a, yeah, kind of a somewhat silly point, but if I have to pull teeth to, like, get things out, and, you know, there's no coherent, like, storytelling nature, you know, and my first question my general approach to interviewing is, because I'm talking to product people whose number one job communication, right? Yep. If I just say, hey, you know what? Open-ended, give me just kind of the career narrative. Help me understand what you started at and where you got to. I dissect that in real time and understand, like, what are they hitting on? Are they hitting on just company went from 10 people to 200 people, 5 million to 20 million? Or is it, hey, I came in, there was no product strategy. Founders had all these different thoughts, or we had one product. Here's how I took it to five. Here's how we got rid of, you know, these features and doubled down on this. Those are the interesting things, right? And so communication and the storytelling nature is an art. There are absolutely people, I will caveat it by saying, there are amazing interviewers who are wonderful storytellers that, you know, all hat and no cattle, right? And you go back channel references and they're like, oh yeah, rising tide floats all boats. They were there for a great run, but it was actually these three people that did all the major lift, right? And so I think there's the communication piece. I think the other piece is leadership. At CPO, at the size and stage at which we're kind of, you know, discussing the CPO role, if communication is not there, that's going to be probably a big issue. But again, I'm not going to rule someone out in a process if maybe they were just rushed and they were like, oh shit, I didn't know what I should cover here. That's okay. Then I dig into the leadership piece, right? And for me, leadership at this CPO, it's bar none, right? I mean, you better absolutely be someone that knows how to build, attract, retain, and push people up and along in their career. And so one of the things that I love asking is, and it kind of throws people off because you're not probably in the middle of your day, you're not thinking about like, who was the best PM that I ever mentored and groomed, but like, who you've become the CPO of two companies or whatever it might be, or, you know, you've become the SVP and you want to be the CPO of said company X. Well, help me understand what the growth of your teams look like. Has anyone gone out and are they a VP of product at a startup? Have you, you know, maybe you're at Splunk and you're like, okay, I'm an SVP at Splunk. I want to be the CPO of a $500 million pre-IPO company. It's like, okay, help me understand what your leadership team, where are they? Who were the people that you plucked out of obscurity and turned into a, you know, a world-class product manager? So the leadership piece is something that I dig in on a lot. And really just try to understand. And again, not everyone has to have like, oh, I've created seven VPs of product for Benchmark and Sequoia companies, but it's like looking at the pedigree of which you hire and where they are today is a signal. It's not the only signal, but it's a signal. And the other thing on leadership too, that I always like to ask is, who did you learn from? You know, if you can triangulate there, and again, what we as executive recruiters look for, we look for signal, right? We look for signal and themes and patterns that we can bring to a client and be like, hey, here's exactly kind of why you need to meet this person. And, you know, who you worked for is another big tell, right? If you were one of the people that CPO talks about of grooming, that's a very powerful thing. And so anyway, I think those are the two biggest ones. You know, if there were any other things like checkbox wise, you know, they're usually table stakes to have the conversation, right? Like you've seen success. Success begets success. No one wants to hire someone that's 0 for 3 on growth stage companies. If you've only ever, you know, grown something from 200 million to 210 million over 4 years, you're probably not going to go get the high flying rubric $500 type CPO job, right? And so again, being my advice to all product people is like, be very self-reflective and understand like where your skill sets are today, what you aspire to do, right? And say you want to be the CPO of Rubrik or any late stage, awesome Databricks, any type of company like that. Looking at where you're at today, and we talked about this, you know, and maybe we'll get back into it in a separate question, but I tell people like, this is a chess, not checkers game, right? You are playing career chess. You are thinking about what moves I need to make, what career experience I need to gain. If you want to be the CPO of Rubrik, we'll just keep going down that path. Like okay, it's a $500 million business that just announced it. You want to join today? Okay, well, they're probably going to be $1 billion in the next 2 years. So you're going to need to find somewhere where you can become maybe the number two on that run, where you can learn from the person who's going to groom and mentor you to be that person. And maybe that's not the next job. Maybe it's two jobs away and Rubrik CPO is three jobs away. But being able to be kind of inward looking and understand, okay, would a recruiter look at my background and say, okay, tomorrow I could be the head of product, CPO, VP product, top product person in the company, or is it, do I need one more role, right? That's the conversation I love having with people. It's like the career narrative when I ask is like, hey, you know what? I was a senior director. I had this kick-ass run. I wanted to take a bet. I wanted to go be the VP product. It didn't work. Company didn't go the way I thought it was. So now I'm back to, you know, I'm back in a senior director role 2 years later because I want to go have another massive run or whatever it might be. And so having those dialogues and being able to, you know, talk very candidly about, you know, the decisions you make with the outcome in mind is something that's pretty darn powerful too, as a career narrative topic.
Got it. Oh, those are some brilliant insights. Amazing. Thank you for that. And our hope with the podcast is exactly to your point, to really help women kind of understand what really is needed to get them to that position, and self-reflection, completely agree with that. And during this process, have you done anything specific to kind of help the candidates from your perspective?
So I think the biggest thing, I would say nothing specific is the very simple answer to that question. My job as an executive recruiter that gets paid to deliver the best talent to the best companies around, you know, again, I said I failed if I have to introduce 20 or 30 candidates. I also fail if I waste the CEO's time. This is where there's like, you know, you have a conversation with the CPO and you're like, their background makes zero sense, but they could do absolutely step in. They could draw a little bit of parallels from their previous experience. But man, they hit on all of the other amazing characteristics. So that's basically how I do that. And there are a lot of these, which is like, I have to sit there and I have to explain. I have to take more time than just sending a resume to a client. Mm-hmm. I sent, a kick-ass CPO's profile and they work in ad tech and I send it to Databricks. I mean, that does not make sense. Like, hey, here's why. And being able to tell that story as an executive recruiter, if you are in a transactional relationship and you just want to kind of get introduced to places, it won't work. But if you have built a relationship with someone like myself or my peers where I can go and I already have credibility because the other five CPOs that I introduced were right down the fairway, everything they wanted. I'm like, this is a flyer, but here's why you have to meet them. That is a very fun and unique scenario to be in. And again, that's how I would say what I do for these top product leaders that I just think the absolute world of is kind of, you know, putting my reputation on the line with founders. Like, here's why you need to meet them. And for the most part, it has paid off nicely. Because again, the people are just phenomenal, world class.
Right. No, that's amazing. Thank you. And just going down a bit into the actual recruiting challenges itself, especially from your perspective, what have been some of the challenges you have faced for recruiting a chief product officer in general? And would love to hear about recruiting for a female chief product officer, which you've done a lot. So you've probably mastered it by now, but would love to hear your thoughts around that.
Yes. So the hardest part of recruiting product execs into companies is the fact that you just don't know what the fit and finish is going to be, right? Like, you get to know the individual, you know their background, you're confident in their ability to be successful because they've done it already, or they've shown signs of, hey, maybe they're not a CPO yet, but here's why they should be in this next opportunity. That's the easy part of the job. The hard part is dissecting down to the, is this person going to gel with the CEO, right? And really digging into like the non-obvious, more kind of softer skills. Mm-hmm. And I err on the side of never ruling somebody out because I don't think that they will be a quote culture fit. I just don't think that that's, I don't work at the company. I've not spent 6 months in the office every day or dealing with culture. And so for me, the way I always put it is I'm like, it just has to like, you know that someone may or may not be a culture fit or like, hey, this person might have a little bit of an ego or whatever comes across in the first conversation. I'll tell founders and CEOs or whoever is the hiring manager, I'll tell them that. But then it comes down to that, to them, right? And sometimes my assessment of, hey, this person has worked on technical products. And here's why you should meet them. They meet the CEO and they're like, they're not technical enough. Right. And so like there's a gap between where I start and where I finish and then where CEOs go and go even deeper. And that all comes down to like, you know, I can understand a lot of the nuances, but you get into like the bits and the bytes of a technology conversation. I'm not a CS degree. I'm not going to be able to go there. Right. And so that is the trickiest part of recruiting CPOs. Men, women, every single type of CPO is just, that's the hardest part. All searches have that, you know, you have to fit and gel. Product especially, right? Because it is who's ever been leading it. In many cases, the founders, right? Maybe they've had a VP of product who did a good job scaling, but now the thing is a multi-product complexity thing and that person can't scale beyond 10 people management. And so now you got to bring in the outside. And so really what happens is, you know, you start to be like, okay, this is that founder's baby or, you know, the product person that's in the seat now, we want to retain them, but do they want to work for somebody else? And so you gotta work through a lot of the different nuances and dynamics that myself as an exec recruiter, I can't control any of those. Right. And so that's the hardest part. Again, just speaking more broadly from a diversity and female perspective, I think it always comes down to two things. One is the easy, probably the number one thing that people always use as the reason why it is so hard, which is, are there enough of them? I will be the first to say like, that is a constant battle that we talk about. And so again, it gets back to the earlier point, how do we expand the funnel? That's the hardest. And then making cases, like I said earlier on, which is, how do you as an executive recruiter make a case for someone who is a non-obvious background, but you've creatively thought about how to dynamically make it work, right? And so it's like, hey, you know what, Mr. and Mrs. CEO, you've never thought about hiring from, you know, digital media because you're an enterprise B2B company, but hey, this person grew up at IBM for 10 years and then they've only done like B2B to C and content things, but they've got that underpinnings of real hardcore enterprise. Here's why they're relevant, because they've seen success now and they've done it across multiple. And the other piece that is obvious to some, not obvious to others, and it took me a while to get over this hump in the kind of the diversity conversation, is nobody wants to be the first. And I think that's something that comes up constantly. I've had multiple outstanding female CPOs and product leaders. Chris, why is there not anyone on the management team? Or maybe it's the CHRO or the CMO, or there's one on the whole team, or there's none, right? And so that is another thing to overcome, which is you either have to want that and want to drive that change. And you know, through the process, I would imagine that's probably going to be literally a question that every woman would ask, which is like, if I'm hearing different things from different people, that's some flags there, right? And so that's the other thing that I've seen as a big issue, which is, again, I think over the last few years it has changed and it has become, you know, very much standard. It's like you cannot just operate with a male only team, especially a white male only team. And so being able to talk through that, and listen, I now ask CEOs for that talk track if I go into a search and I look at that.
Got it. And just one clarification so that I understand. When you said they don't want them to be the first, does that mean like the first executive C member in the company? Is that what you meant?
And that's kind of what I mean, which is like,
okay.
not them as in like the company doesn't want them to be the first. It's the woman who's the CPO is like, looking around the table, like this is a bunch of men. Like, I've had people back out of searches because they were introduced to like the senior director of HR and then like a regional VP of accounts, neither of which sit at the table. And they're like, well, did I just meet them because they're like the two most senior women, or what happened here? Right. And so right. It's actually a thing that comes up in process if it's not addressed right from the start.
That's an amazing insight. Thank you for that. And do you see any differences from your experience to hire a male CPO versus a female CPO?
The short answer is no. I think there are no differences. The process is the same. The outcome, for me at least, my mental model is, have I done what I set out to do, which is uncover and get in front of the best CPOs that map to this client need? And you know, whatever it might be, if I can say, hey, you know what? We ran a great process. We had a diverse slate. Whichever way it ends, it ends. And I think the thing that I always come back to is where do we at kind of critical junctures in a search point to, like, do we have our person now versus do we keep going, right? If you have not had a diverse slate, it is a never let's just stop. It is a let's keep going. Let's get to kind of a point where it's like we've seen a wide swath of candidates in the market. And I think the only difference is, you know, if you have a client who has like this time speed to close mentality, if you can't run that process, then unfortunately you might not be able to get to a point where you've got conviction that, you know, you've ran down every diverse candidate around. And I think those are the differences. And some CEOs are just, hey, let's run a process. These are the 10 companies I want to recruit from. Give me every product person that has worked there that has been successful. And if there's only two women that have ever worked at those 10 companies at leadership levels, it's like, I can't change a CEO's mind, right? And so I think that's the part where I always kind of come back and forth with a founder. It's like, well, speed versus running a full process. How do we want to evaluate that? And what are the key criteria? So it's just, it's a tricky part, but there's no differences in how a search is done. It's more so the space in which it's done and how fast we can get of these diverse candidates and females.
Hence, in this whole process of being able to really understand the need for the CPO from the companies, sourcing the candidates, interviewing them, and then finally the offer stage, what do you think seems to be the most hardest phase based on your experience?
Well, I would say probably the start and the finish are if we break it down across kind of a search continuum, everything in the middle, you're kind of just making sure that everyone in the process is in the loop, here's the backgrounds, and you do everything you need to, you know, you put flak jackets around candidates, here's why they're good, here's their, you know, potential yellow flags, here's all the feedback that there are questions that are coming up through a process. But the hardest part is, I mean, it is getting in front of the right people, right? If you've got, here's what I tell my team all the time, which is if I'm pitching, or if I'm running the CPO search for Confluent or Airtable or Notion or whatever, people are going to call me back. That just, there's just literally no reason that anyone would not call me back on this. I mean, these are the lead market leaders. Everyone knows them. Like when I did the Figma search, it was, I think that thing was cool. Now, I placed Yuki there and the thing just had its massive exit. And it was one of those, like, if I was doing Figma last year, I could have talked to the best, anyone that got a note from me would have called me back because they would have known it's Figma, and Figma pretty much speaks for itself. So right. Fortunately, I have the ability to represent companies that speak for themselves, but that's not the case for every Series A, B, C, D company, right? That's like, hey, we're trying to carve out this really interesting space in the, like, in the health tech world or in medical devices. We're trying to change the world that they do selling. And you gotta find a way to get in front of these people, right? And so there's the obvious, anyone will call Chris back or any executive recruiter brand name. But then on the flip side is, how do we get the other, you know, women in product and men in product and anyone that's like, I've never heard of this company. So like, what are the things that that's the hardest part, right? Which is getting people to engage in a conversation, because the people that we're engaging and everyone, that's majority of the people that are going to listen to this, they are happily employed who, you know, maybe like, okay, like I could see myself taking a step at some point in the next few quarters, but maybe not, right? And like, maybe not until that perfect thing comes along. And so you get a lot of rejection. You deal with that very, very easily at this point, and you become hardened to the fact that it's like, no, I'm not, that's not interesting to me. It's like, okay, well, that's fine. So getting in front of people and getting in front of the right people, that's the hardest, especially when there's not a massive amount of women in that category which you're hunting. How do you get creative right from the start? And then the close is tricky, because you're dealing with more than just a process. You're dealing with someone's literally life decision. Mm-hmm. Joining, this is their livelihood. They make X today, and you're at a public company or whatever it might be, and they got to go join a private. Like, it's not just them; it's their partner and family and everyone in their orbit that is kind of saying, "Okay, this is the right time." And this, you become kind of like, you know, armchair psychologist at some points, and you're like, okay, like, where are you here? And how do we think about this? It's not just, here's the cash base bonus equity. But then it's like, okay, we got to talk about, what does this look like if the thing is only a 2x multiple growth? Or, hey, I can sell you the dream of you're going to take this and 50 exit and make, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. But we all know that that's not the case for pretty much most companies. And so that's where it becomes it's a harder thing. It's a harder conversation that you're trying to have, because you're trying to pull someone from the thing that they are inherently excited about building to go do it somewhere else. And it's the hardest when they're happily employed. And so that's, I guess that's how I'd describe it. It's just like, you become more of a, just person to help listen and be a sounding board than, you know, some sort of hardcore negotiator to like close the deal.
Very interesting. Very interesting on that front. And just taking a step forward, in your experience placing all these amazing women in the past in the CPO roles, have there been any trends or observations that you've kind of leaned towards? I know you talked about a few of them, but anything else you want to add there?
I would say a couple things. Build relationships with people that matter. Kind of goes with all things in life, but In the world of executives, I don't see every search. My peers don't see every search. Searches get filled by boards. They get filled by networks. They get filled by VCs. My advice is find the area that you want to operate in and figure out who's really, really good in that area. So for example, if someone says, hey, I want to be in private equity, like I want to be the CPO of, you know, Riverbed. It's like, I don't do those searches, but there is someone that is a professional expert at those. And so that's something that will just take time, but be open. Like, I've had this conversation with a few folks. And I'm like, I was like, oh, I've been so busy, I don't take any recruiter calls. It's like, that's okay. You don't have to take a call. But I think what it is just having an ear open and just being like, what comes across my desk? In the last 2 years, every product leader from director and above probably heard about every VP Series A to whatever funded company. That's all going by the wayside, and all the companies on the margin are not going to get funded. They're not going to need VPs of product. And so now it's like, in the next 12 to 18 months, there shouldn't be anything but interesting searches around. And I think that's something that I would call out, which is, you know, in the last 2 years, if you were in a specific sector, you get your first, second, and third place companies, they're all there. Unfortunately, the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, 10th all got funded. those companies are not going to exist in a little while because they're on the margin. That's like the VCs would rather go find a way to pump all their money into the first three. And I think that's where what I tell people is the volume of searches will decrease. You will not get as many phone calls, but the ones that you do get are going to be meaningful. We've got cash to go pay an executive search firm. People don't actually think about that. It is expensive to hire me or anyone else doing executive recruiting. And so if you're going to get an executive recruiter call, you can be rest assured that there's probably enough capital in the bank. There's a growth story to be had. And so it probably is worth at least listening to, hey, you know what? Maybe you make a friend or two in the exec recruiting business too. That might be useful.
Right. No, that's an excellent tip. How do you think recruiting for this chief product officer might change in the future? And do you actually think it might change?
That's a great question. I don't know that it will change all that much. I think the role of product will continue to play a more prominent part in every company. And so what will happen is you will see, and you see this, I mean, it is literally the name of the number one trend around, which is product-led growth. And product people will continue to evolve the function where it is always customer focused. It is always based on, you know, what we build. Does it add value? But how does it work? How do we use it? How does it get kind of intertwined? And so I think you're going to see a lot more visually stimulated, analytical, mathematical types of PMs who, you know, it's not just about growth hacking. It's about, is the product that we're building adding value, but then also, how do people consume it? Is this a beautiful product? You know, even the old school companies that, you know, and not that Workday is an old school company, but you know, people soft into Workday, you're like, okay, now how do I modernize this? How do I make an HR product that people want to use? That's what I think is going to be the most interesting part to watch as products evolve. It has to be something that people can use day in and day out, even if they only use it for 1 hour a day, or maybe just check it. It has to be highly usable. So recruiting for that CPO, I think, is just we're gonna start to see more like visually appealing mental models that people bring to the table.
Got it. No, very well said. Thank you. And any other advice that you would give to the CEOs actually who are looking to hire the CPOs?
Yeah, I have a lot of advice. I spend a lot of time, I spend probably 4 or 5 hours with CEOs before I even remotely say, okay, now here's my fee. And the reason for that is, sometimes they don't need them. Sometimes they just need to solve the problem through different mechanisms. And so my advice to founders is similar to what I said earlier with candidates, do a self-reflection. What's working? What's not? Do you need this hire? Or is this just you're frustrated because you've got one too many direct reports and you want to consolidate it? If that's the case, that's a different reason to hire a CPO than, you know, we've got multiple market expansions, new products. We've got this one is the cash cow. This one's this new innovation hub. We got to spin up a bunch of new things. So figuring out why you're hiring this person and working back, figuring out what success looks like. Again, I start with the kind of the end goal and work backwards. If you know what success looks like in a year, right? We penetrated this new account, this many new accounts with this new product. We launched it last year in Q4. We're in Q1. We hire this person at the end of Q1. Okay, what does that new product penetration look like? Now, obviously, that's a sales problem, but product needs to drive that too, right? And so there's a lot of those things of identifying kind of this key success metrics that I always talk about. Trying to understand the operational cadence of what the CEO wants to do and where they want to spend their time with this person on board, because so many CEOs, you know, they are product thinkers, right? They built the thing. They come from scratch. And so being able to identify, hey, here's where I do like stepping in. I had a public company CEO who started the thing, was on his third company. And he said, Chris, I need someone that's okay as the president of technology, CPO. They have to be okay that I'm going to just go around them. I'm going to drop in three layers into the organization and I'm going to take five engineers and two product people. And we're going to go and we're going to just, you know, whiteboard. And as long as this person is okay with me doing that, I'm not going to be like, whoa, you can't do that. I'm the CPO. These are real things that happen. And other CPOs. And so those are the types of things that I talk to CEOs about, which is, again, why do you need it? What does success look like? What's the operating cadence? And what are the gaps? And then it's like, cross-functionally too. Sometimes, is this product? Do you need a culture shift? Like, is this, hey, sales is just kind of driving it because we've never had a strong product person in the seat, and now we have to mentally change the dynamic in the company. Those are all things that I look at and kind of dig in with founders on.
That's amazing. Thank you. And maybe one last question. Since the series is all about women in product and path to the CPO rank, what advice would you give for some of our female leaders who are, let's say, one level down the chief product officer path? And what kind of preparation would you recommend them to do? I know you talked about self-reflection and being able to really do the storytelling. Anything else you want to add there, Chris?
First thing, surround yourself by people who are absolutely at or better or doing the job already. Like, surround yourself with a crew that is in the same mental mode as you, right? Because, again, the people that I associate kind of big time CPO roles with, they all know each other, right? And it's like, you're not really plucking anyone out of obscurity and kind of putting them in this high profile role. It's like, because again, they're all coming from kind of the successful companies. And so the piece of advice would be network with kind of who's doing the role that you want to do. Find a mentor. I won't get into kind of how to go about that. There's probably plenty of podcasts on that, but it's like finding validating ways to add value for someone else that you can then in turn gain value from them. Right. And I think that's something that I talk to people all the time about. Who do you want to be like? Who's interesting? Who do you think is world class? And asking people that question, and they're like, and here's why. Because if you have not done the job, you do not know what the job entails until you truly are either in the job or you've spent so much time with someone who's done it that you can be like, okay, now I see. And I think that's just a unique data point, is not just, be a part of a group, but be a part of a small group, be a part of like a very specific group of like, you want to be a CPO and consumer, find out who some of the best are, right? And kind of network your way in. And that's one piece. Again, depends on the place in which you want to hunt for that CPO job. Getting to know the people who are outside of just exec circles, at these growth stage, all the venture firms, like being known has its pros and cons, but like, if someone reaches out about like advisory or networking or board stuff, like have those conversations, because I think those are the things where, a lot of high profile companies don't actually have to ever go to search, because they just the know people. Right. And so that's kind of the general networking thing. What else would be, I think being realistic is always something that is, discussed when I have conversations with people, and it goes with founders too. Like, are you willing to take the bet? Where are you at in your life? I think that's something that is also not talked about enough, is people want to be the CPO. You want to be the CPO, but you also want your like cushy lifestyle, and kind of everything has its place. Those things don't really always line up. And so I think that is not like work-life balance sort of analogy. I don't want to mistake that. That is the, like, hey, you've worked at Facebook for 10 years. You know the operating model. Everything is safe. Everything is easy. Again, all in quotation, nothing's ever easy. But you look at people that operate only at Google or Facebook or whatever it might be, and they're world-class. You get out into the CPO world of some kick-ass growth stage company, it's a whole new ball game, right? Swimming in lanes you've never swam in before. You're dealing with things you never dealt with. You've obviously you still have your work-life balance and all that stuff, and that's still important, but the cadence is just so different. So spending a lot of time, I spend a lot of time with people being like, all right, do you know what you're getting into? That's part of the thing what I just mentioned, like talk to people who have done the job, talk to people who have left the companies that you're at and taken these CPO jobs. So those are kind of the general themes that, you know, you might get appeal, the big CPO job might be very appealing, but then you kind of are like, well, what are the trade-offs? I think that's something that, again, I spend more time once I get someone into a process. It's like, okay, now you're in. You like the CEO, you like the, you know, one or two execs you've met. How now do you evaluate where you're at in your life to make that very, very important leap into a different dimension, basically?
That's amazing. Thank you so much for that. And I think that's, yeah, we're almost at the time. I really didn't think we would probably need an hour, but during the first 15 minutes, I knew we would absolutely need the hour.
I think one of the other things that we've heard from women who are at these really high levels is that they kind of have this mindset, for those who have families and children, they sort of have this mindset of like, if I'm going to be away from my children, it better be for something good. Like, not just run-of-the-mill stuff. It's really interesting how they think about it. They think about it differently, I think.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I think there's just people are wired differently, right? And I think if like, I think of Annika, and that's why I kind of use Rubrik, but it would call her out in that conversation. Like, there are people who just, they're like, Dia Jolly is another one. Like, it just come to mind. And I'm like, they take no bullshit. They're like, fuck off. Here's my operating model. Here's how I'm going to do it and fall in line. And, you know, it's like, it's a really interesting piece to talk about too. And just how their operating model lines up with the company is that they're like, hey, I deal with my family, but then I'm back online and I'm doing this, that, and the other thing. It's like, they are there because they are fully bought in and they'll get the job done no matter what, which is always fun and interesting.
Chris, can't thank you enough.
This has been awesome. Thank you all so much for just including me.
Rashmi, such an interesting conversation with Chris. One of the things that really stood out to me was the focus on fit with the CEO. I found his comments to be almost an echo of Annie Pearl's earlier interview, where she really addressed this issue from the point of view of being a candidate. She felt that having clarity between the CEO and the CPO on what the organization needed and how the candidate fit with that was a key to success in the role. Any tidbits from that interview that you'd like to share?
I thought Chris had a very unique perspective to executive search that is top down, beginning with a very clear focus on the need for a CPO. He emphasizes the importance of storytelling and delving inward to understand how a recruiter would perceive one's background. He urges one to think about who you've worked for and whom have you mentored and where are they now in their careers. Such introspection can be crucial in presenting oneself effectively to recruiters and potential employers. He also candidly shares some of the challenges he faces as an executive recruiter.
We hope you'll join us for the next episode, where Rashmi will speak with Ted Krantz, CEO of Data.ai, to hear his perspective as a CEO who recently hired a CPO. Maybe you can guess who that CPO is. Thank you for listening, and thanks also to our partner Discover Card, who provides annual support for the work of Women in Product and our community. This podcast is an original production of Women in Product. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Leave us a review so that others can discover us, or share this podcast with people you know. If you have any questions or suggestions for future guests, you can reach us at podcast@womenpm.org.